golfers, and welcome to Finding Fairways here on Up North Sports Radio, brought to us by carlsgolfland.com. Jerry Coyne is on the phone with J.R. Roth, as I reached out to J.R. and a few other folks on this particular episode about all the exploding news on the LIV Tour. And J.R., thanks for joining us. I know this is a controversial and sore subject with a lot of people.
Well, it is. I mean, you know, players make choices to play where they want to play. But, you know, I think the thing that people forget is that the PGA Tour is an organization with a lot of rich history, both from a playing standpoint, both from sponsor commitment standpoint, and also the commitment that they have to communities for helping those communities through charitable contributions. And, you know, the growing the game theme over the last 10 years or so has been enhanced quite a lot by the PGA Tour and everything that they do. And the PGA Tour is there for the players. And so, it's, you know, it's a money grab. It's an obvious money grab. And for those players that choose to make that decision to go that route, you know, decisions have consequences. And if it's all about the money, so be it. You know, they have that right. But they, in my opinion, they don't have that right to kind of double dip and just cherry pick where they want to play for their own personal gain.
Yeah, I guess that's the line in the sand for the PGA Tour. We've seen just in the last few days, first Dustin Johnson slide over. I don't think it was earth-shattering that a lot of the European players who are in their later stages of their career have done this, and it doesn't make it that important. But when DJ jumps, and then, of course, Phil, and now DeChambeau and Patrick Reed, we're getting into some dangerous territory as far as PGA player commitments, aren't we?
Well, see, this is where I kind of disagree with that line, too. And that's, you know, at one time, Patrick Reed was a struggling Monday qualifier who played well enough to play his way onto the tour, play his way onto Ryder Cups, play his way into the hearts of fans through his play, right? Nothing was given to Patrick Reed.
Right.
And Patrick was the low man on the totem pole. He worked his way up to where he is now. He's made the decision, strictly, in my opinion, for money, to go that route. Good for him. But at the same time, I don't believe he has the right to go against the organization's rules and regulations, which he signed up for when he rode that ladder up to the top. He doesn't get to cherry pick. He doesn't get to kind of come and go as he pleases. Because part of what the PGA Tour is all about is the communities they serve, the sponsors that they commit to. I mean, these sponsors are committing heavy money. And, you know, the players are part of that commitment back to the communities, back to the sponsors that commit to putting these purses in front of them. I do think where the PGA Tour has kind of lost its way is not helping the superstars. It's helping those guys on the Canadian Tour, the Corn Ferry Tour, the Latin American Tour. I think anytime you tee it up in a PGA sanctioned tour event, that you should be guaranteed some money, whether it's $2,000, $5,000, $10,000, you know, relative to the tour purses that they play on. A tour player should not go away on a Friday evening without a check in his hand. You know, we're in that day and age of everybody is out there with a very high level of talent and play and entertaining sponsors in the pro-ams, blah, 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 entertaining the fans, signing the autographs. Every tour player on every PGA sanctioned tour is doing their part. Now, obviously, the superstars are getting all the attention. You know, they've earned that. Like I say, the Patrick Reeds of the world 10 years ago were nothing. And now Patrick Reed has some star power. But I do think that the PGA Tour needs to help those players that are trying to climb the ladder. Because it's kind of a shame when on a Friday evening, the caddy of a tour player goes away with more money than the tour player. and you know, that's not to badmouth the caddies.
No.
The caddies are part of the team. But I do think that PGA Tour, you know, they come out with this PIP program, which I thought was just total BS. They could have taken that $40 or $50 million and fed all these tours that I'm talking about, these players that I'm talking about, and given them a little something for the effort. You know, Tiger Woods does not need another $20 million. Phil Mickelson doesn't need another $10 million.
Well, maybe Phil does, JR. Maybe he's lost it all.
Yeah. Well, and you know, to that point, everybody that is jumping over to live has their own personal story.
Right.
And I think you can't put a blanket statement over the entire 17 or 20 players that have jumped. Because everybody's jumping for a different reason. You know, nobody can really explain why Taylor Gooch would do what he did, but everybody knows why Phil Mickelson did what he did. So
right.
I think everybody's story is different. I think the PGA Tour has the right to do what they did. It'll be settled in the courts, but I think when it's all said and done, the history, the legacy, the goodwill that the PGA Tour does is going to far outweigh anything that LIV Golf will ever be able to bring to the table.
You know, you brought up a point that has been one thing that I've looked at. You know, the trunk slammers, the guys that give up everything in their lives to try to earn their tour card, whether they go to, you know, Q school or Monday qualify. Tom Lehman is another example of the same thing that you mentioned with Patrick Reed. And JR, you know, probably better than most, because you've taught so many of these guys and seen them try their luck on the micro tours and build up a career. And it costs a lot of money. I mean, you know, some of the guys from Birmingham Country Club that tried to give money to players to try their luck on the PGA Tour, and most of that money never comes back because none of those guys ever did anything. So it's a gamble. It's a tremendous amount of money spent just to try to get your tour card in most cases.
Well, it is. And you know, everybody knows what they're getting into when they do that. And, you know, if you're a college player who's getting a degree in whatever it is, you've got something to fall back on. If you're in a, say, the professional golf management program, you've got maybe a career to kind of go towards if you don't make it on the mini tours and get some sort of a tour card and play golf for a living. There's a very, very small percentage of people that get the privilege,
right,
if you will, to be able to make a living playing golf. And for those that do make it and make a lot of money, they're very well paid. And then there's a handful of those people that we've seen go to this tour that's offering just money that is over and above what even the best in the game think that they're worth playing for. You know, there's always been more to playing golf than just the money, right? There's the history, there's the legacy, there's
right,
the ability to compare generations of play and the passion for the game, right? You know, I've always said that, you know, money buys you options, but it doesn't buy you happiness. And I think this is a perfect example of, you know, all these guys are going to be laughing all the way to the bank, whether they come out on top,
right,
or come out on, you know, on the short end. Let's just say Dustin Johnson never tees it up in a PGA Tour event again. I don't think personally he really cares.
No.
He'll lose out on being in the World Golf Hall of Fame. He'll lose out on being a Ryder Cup captain. But I really don't think that Dustin Johnson cares about that. Now, when you watch the interview of Graham McDowell, I think there's a totally different personality there. I think there's a guy that really is tiptoeing through this process. But, you know,
well,
he took the money and run.
Yeah, well,
you know,
we know how important the Ryder Cup has been
to do what he wants to do.
Yeah, we all know how important the Ryder Cup has been to Graham McDowell. And you know, Dustin Johnson's an odd duck anyways. He doesn't really seem to care about anything. You know, he got a little choked up when he won the Masters. But he's always been that kind of detached player anyways. I guess the more interesting case, J.R. Roth, is James Pyatt. You know, the reigning U.S. amateur champion who hasn't fared so well in the events that he's gotten into. He hasn't made a cut yet. And in fact, he didn't play well enough to even make it into the NCAA finals after he returned to school. And now he's going to get $6 million to try to improve his game, where he would have certainly been on the Corn Ferry Tour. I don't think he was playing well enough to, you know, to earn his stripes on the PGA Tour. So is this a good thing for James Pyatt, or do you still hold the same opinion in this case as you do with the other ones we're talking about?
Well, because he's so young and because he's unproven, and I say that relatively speaking, right? I mean, he's unproven in the sense that, you know, he's played a handful of tour events and been exposed to the tour life now for a couple of months, and had a lot of attention over the last 8 months or so with his tremendous win at Oakmont. And, you know, as you climb the ladder of competition and attention, it brings on a whole new set of emotions, and how he deals with those emotions will either stop him dead in his tracks or feed into the talent that he does have and stimulate it to do bigger and better things. This is where I think each player has an individual story. I wonder down the line if, because I think James Pyatt will be immune from any of the implications that the tour is bringing down on these guys, because he hasn't gotten to that spot yet. But will it keep him from getting exemptions into tour events until he works his way onto the tour as a tour player? And when he does go through the Q school and maybe get a Corn Ferry card, what's that interaction going to be like on the practice tee, on the golf course, and in the locker room with other players? Those are the unknowns that we just can't, I mean, we can speculate, but we just can't. No, I mean, somebody like Phil Mickelson, I think it's a little more obvious, where it's going to be a lot of hard feelings for maybe forever. You know, with Mickelson, he was probably going to be the next Ryder Cup captain. And I might as well throw this out there while I've got a little bit of a stage to do it. But this is the perfect opportunity for the PGA of America to right a wrong that they've had for 30 years, and that's name Larry Nelson as the next Ryder Cup captain when it comes back.
Yeah. When we return here on Finding Fairways, we'll ask J.R. Roth about what the scuttlebutt was about the LIV Tour and his general observations after having played at Harbor Shores in the senior PGA. When we come back here on Up North Sports Radio's Finding Fairways, brought to us by CarlsGolfland.com. It's time to check in with our good friends at CarlsGolfland.com, Jerry Coyne with Tim Coyle. And Tim, pretty exciting announcement. I know we've got, you know, Father's Day coming up. I just got some golf balls from my son sent through Carl's. You guys are reviving a charitable event that I'm glad to see is returning.
Yeah, we're super excited to have it back. The Odyssey $500,000 putting challenge here at our Bloomfield location is back this year for the first time since 2019. So we're really excited to have it back, and hopefully this is the year, Jerry, we see somebody roll it in for $500K.
Yeah, it hasn't ever happened. I've done it a few times because how much does it cost to participate, Tim?
It doesn't cost anything to participate. The beauty of it is that you don't have to pay a thing. You could be the last guy standing at the end with a 60-foot putt for $500K. I will say, though, that many of our entrants will utilize the buy-up program, which is a donation, actually. So
right.
The best part about the Odyssey Putt Challenge, all proceeds are going to the C.S. Mott Children's Hospital for the kids, is what we like to say around here, Jerry. When anybody's looking to, should they buy up another 10 feet or not? But you can always donate. Go to C.S. Mott Children's Hospital, and each round of the event, you can buy up to a closer putt, up to 5 feet to a 5-foot putt. You know, first round, I believe, you have a 25-foot putt for free, or you can pay your way up to a 5-foot putt to have you know, and the donation obviously goes to the C.S. Mott Children's Hospital. So there's some great swag along the way as well as you advance through the rounds, courtesy of Odyssey and Carl's Golfland, obviously. But yeah, we're excited to have everybody out for the event here coming up in July.
No, that's why I know I've paid money, because I bought my way all the way up to a 5-foot putt and missed that thing.
Yeah, right. Yeah, absolutely. So I guess the important dates to remember, July 9th is the date of the actual putting event. Balls will start rolling here at Bloomfield Hills location at 10 a.m. If you are interested in registering, all you have to do is go to our website, carlsgolflane.com/register, and sign up for your chance to compete, and we will be notifying all contestants by July 1st if they have been selected to enter the contest.
There you go. It is a worthy cause, a lot of fun, and you could win $500K. So head to carlsgolfland.com. Tim, thanks a lot for bringing the challenge back.
Absolutely. Can't wait for July 9th.
Here on Up North Sports Radio, brought to us by CarlsGolfLand.com. Jerry Coyne is still on the phone with J.R. Roth. And J.R., interesting point of view about the Larry Nelson thing. That is, I agree with you, almost borderline travesty that Larry has never gotten really the recognition as a player or as a Ryder Cupper. And why he was never a captain to begin with is amazing. So I don't know if that's going to happen with obviously Mickelson is not going to be a Ryder Cup captain, which I guess is the sacrifice for making a big cash grab. I guess you have to weigh your options, and it's probably going to cost Phil a potential seat in the chair for CBS or NBC.
Yeah, possibly. I mean, you know, you've got that kind of personality that, you know, in the booth would play out very well to people watching after what has transpired over the past several months. I just don't know if anybody would, you know, want to take a chance on that anymore. But
right.
Certainly got the experience and the track record, speak like Johnny Miller did for 24 years in the booth. So, yeah, I mean, again, decisions have consequences and people will move on. Sponsors will be lost. New opportunities will be found. The Larry Nelson thing is just, I think, an opportunity to right the wrong and also maybe be a little bit of a good news story over the next couple of years, where I think there's going to be a lot of turbulence in the golf world that we're just not accustomed to.
No doubt about it. As I was talking to you off air before we did this these segments, you were at Harbor Shores, and this obviously had to be a topic of conversation. You were telling me that your caddy heard some pretty interesting things.
Well, yeah, and they were more on a personal note of some of the things that were going on. I don't think that's the kind of thing that I want to talk about on the radio, because it is gossip, and so, you know, you never want to throw stuff out unless you no, it's a fact to be, but the caddies were chirping. And you know, generally speaking, when the caddies are chirping, there's some stuff going on, you know. I would think that would be a good source of news if you wanted to grab somebody and put them on the radio. But, yes, the caddies were chirping pretty good in the caddy yard. But, you know, those are the kinds of things that typically should probably be left alone in the caddy yard.
Well, you got to imagine, though, this is big windfalls for caddies. I mean, Dustin Johnson's caddy, who is his brother, is going to make a hell of a lot more money caddying for DJ over there than he would on the PGA Tour, right? Because you are paid by the success of your player.
Well, for sure, and you know, you bring up another good point about the money. You know, if you if you take away the money element, LIV Golf offers no cut, guaranteed money, 54 holes, shotgun start, probably a beverage cart on every three or four holes for beers. And so what does LIV Golf do to grow the game? It puts money in those players' pockets. The LIV people don't need any sponsors because everybody's buying their oil.
Right.
So, you know, as long as we're buying their oil, you know, they've got that. We're actually sponsoring LIV Golf, right?
That's a good point.
So the point I'm trying to make is the players that have gone this route have kind of deceived the fans by saying that the PGA Tour is the place to play. But we've decided we're going to go play LIV Golf. Well, if they just come right out and honestly say, you know, we're taking the money grab. It's time for me to cash out. The idea of playing competitive golf is secondary. It's all about the money. I want to take care of myself, my family, my, you know, generations of family. You know, people might be able to accept that because then they can kind of discern the difference between a Rory McIlroy and a Dustin Johnson, right? Who do I want to be a fan of? Oh yeah, I like DJ because he's got the money and he's got the lifestyle and that's great. Well, no, I want to be Rory's, you know, fan because, you know, he's wealthy, he's powerful, he's a tremendous player, he's a grinder, you know, he still wants to grow the game that way. You know, fans can then make choices. But when players lie to fans, it really confuses the situation. So, you know, I just see that element of money as being 99.9% of the reason why guys are going. And, I mean, I have no idea who's leading the LIV event. I don't care to really know. I watched about 5 minutes of Phil Mickelson's interview before the tournament began, and he looked like a deer staring into headlights. And it was almost like he had a computer chip in his brain, and somebody was programming him what to say and how to say it. It's just very, very strange. And I just really want no part of it because it's not the way I have always viewed the game of golf and the business of golf. It's just not the business model that I want to get behind.
J.R. Roth from the Boyne Golf Academy, of course, a great playing career here in the state of Michigan. Just wanted to reach out and get your opinion. I knew you'd have some interesting things to say. So thanks for taking the time and joining us on Finding Fairways.
Yeah, thanks, Jerry. Anytime.
All right, we appreciate it. We'll be back after these words from our fine partners on Finding Fairways, brought to us by carlsgolfland.com. It's time to check in with our good friends at Boyne Golf. Jerry Coyne is on the phone with Ken Griffin. And Ken, another Adidas State Pro-Am held at Boyne.
Yeah, the weather gave us some challenges on Monday, up to an inch of rain, but really played right through it. 115 teams with just a little delay, but courses held up well and a great event. Both the players and the Michigan PGA were very complimentary of the course conditions in spite of the rain.
Well, that's fantastic. Now you've got two more courses open to accommodate the huge crowds that are coming out to Boyne.
Oh, yeah, we've got all 10 courses open. You know, we also just hosted the Pure Michigan Golf Tour, came through Bay Harbor yesterday afternoon, and the crew played there, and it was just a great day to play Bay Harbor. Temps in the mid-60s and beautiful weather, and it looks like we're going to have another great week ahead. Can you believe temperatures up into the 70s and 80s?
90s by Tuesday, yes. Golf weather is here, and you are still got some great deals online, Ken. I'm surprised, really, with the amount of play and how much golf rates are going up in the area.
Yeah, well, you know, we've always got good, you know, our late afternoon because we have a lot of, you know, people that travel in from Michigan or all over the U.S. to play our courses. But now that we're into June, you know, it's a great opportunity, especially for those that live in Michigan or they're visiting. You know, we have long evenings, you know, play till 10 o'clock, million-dollar sunset. And we have great savings on happy hour tee times after 4 o'clock. You know, you can play on five of our award-winning courses from just $60, or you can play the Lynx Quarry at Bay Harbor that's a top 100 public course in the U.S. by numerous publications for just $130.
I got a friend visiting from California next week, Ken, and we are coming out to the quarry and the links because it's been a while, and he's just got to see that.
It's spectacular, and, you know, you hit that in the evening with the sunset. There's not much better over the lake. You know, we also, Jerry, have a June stay-and-play offer. That's a golf package available weekdays and weekends, but you must book it by Wednesday night coming up, but through stays through the month of June.
That's right, and it's all one click away at BoyneGolf.com. Ken, we'll see you out on the fairway.
See you next week, Gary.
Welcome back to Finding Fairways here on Up North Sports Radio, brought to us by CarlsGolfLand.com. Jerry Coyne is on the phone with my co-host Joe Charles, the Director of Golf Instruction at Boyne Golf Academy. Joe, we've seen some pretty interesting tournament play recently. What did you think about JT's comeback at the PGA?
Pretty impressive. That kid's got some game. And he is not scared to go low, that's for sure. Anybody who's shot 59 before is not, you know, he's a guy that is always a threat. And, you know, I think biggest comeback in golf history or
tied,
you know,
it, yeah.
Tied for it.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, pretty cool stuff. And he's, you know, with his dad being a PGA professional like I am as well, you know, you just love to see that. It's a pretty cool story.
Yeah, and it had the makings of that with the guys in front of him having no real major experience, so a number of people thought that might happen. And that leads to the question, when you step into a nerve-wracking situation like that, what are some of the ways to calm your nerves? Because obviously, you know, the guys in front, I mean, he was seven behind. Regardless of what you shoot, if the leaders had shot under par, he still doesn't win.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, there's, you know, you talk to sports psychologists and you know, different really high-level players, and everybody has their own little knacks and, you know, things that they do. I remember, you know, for example, I remember Tiger Woods telling a story. I don't know if you remember the was it the PGA that he won, you know, against Bob May? And
yeah.
He had to make, I think the greatest putt in history. It was like a 6-footer, left to righter, you know, screaming fast greens, and he had to make this putt, and it's about a cup and a half outside the hole to have a playoff. Otherwise, Bob May beats Tiger Woods.
Right.
And I remember him afterwards, you know, they're playing a video and he's watching it, and they asked him, Tiger, what were you thinking during that putt? And he said, I just thought to myself, right before I hit it, I said to myself, come on, Tiger, your mom could make this putt. And that's just one of those, you know, that's something that, you know, kind of got his engine going, and maybe it, you know, made it simplified the situation for him. And, you know, that's just one of the things that he did. And you, there's a million little things that you can do like that to, you know, to help yourself and to calm yourself, to think about it like, you know, it's just another golf shot or whatever the case may be. But it's just about finding out, you know, what works for you. And that's really what it's all about.
Yeah, it's funny. You know, maybe you can explain what your feelings are when you first get into a real pressurized situation. I'm sure you've had it where all of a sudden a ton of different emotions and thoughts are rolling through your head that rarely ever come into play when you're normally playing golf and you can't feel your grips. And all you could think about is what's going to go wrong. I'm sure that's happened to you a couple of times before you learn how to calm that a little bit.
Yeah, you know, I talk about this with my players all the time, and I've had the opportunity to play golf with a lot of, you know, PGA Tour players when I was younger.
Mm-hmm.
And one thing that I gathered from them is that they are simple-minded creatures. You know, they don't overthink things. They aren't as analytical as you would think that they are.
Uh-huh.
They have the ability to, and I always talk about this with my juniors, they think do, not don't.
Right.
So they think about what they do want to do, not about what they don't want to do. So, you know, you're standing on a tight par four with water left and, you know, out of bounds right. And what are those guys thinking about? They're thinking about the specific spot in the fairway and the trajectory and the shot shape that they're going to hit. And then they do it, right? They're not thinking, oh, don't hit it on the out of bounds. Cause, you know, what's the worst thing that you can do right before you hit a golf shot?
Think
look
about
it where you don't want to hit it.
Exactly.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So your body's naturally going to, you know, hit that shot. So it's amazing. You know, there's different things we can do with visualization and, you know, breathing exercises, to help get you through those situations.
Yeah, it's an interesting phenomenon. I've told that story before about a young assistant from Birmingham Country Club who ended up taking the lead at Honda and went into almost a coma on the back nine, shot 42, and his old boss at Birmingham Country Club called him up a couple days later and he said, "Well, what happened?" He goes, "I don't know. I can't remember. I could barely see. I could barely breathe." And, you know, he never even played on the PGA Tour again. He was leading Honda by three shots opening, you know, on the last day. And that's not uncommon. I mean, you know, Mito Pereira was winning by a number of strokes and shot, what, 76 on the last day
and
lost the PGA. And it's a very common story.
And had a very good chance at the end to win it.
Yeah.
And made the most awkward-looking golf swing I think I've ever seen from a leader in that type of situation.
Right.
And, you know, that's just a pure case of his body he just stopped moving at impact. He had impact anxiety, body stops rotating.
Yep.
And, you know, it turns into a really, you know, bad situation. But, you know, it's just one of those things where the more times you put yourself in that situation, you become more comfortable. And then the more comfortable you are in that situation, like JT was, for example, the better you're going to perform.
Yeah, and it leads to a discussion you and I have had and Kevin and I have had about this new, younger generation of players. They're just more prepared quicker to have success on the PGA Tour. I don't know, because they're playing more competitive golf in the NCAA or it used to be, well, you need a couple years before you can really compete or win a major or win a tournament, and that's not the case at all.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's, you know, a case of our golfer development programs and the quality of instruction is a lot better now than it used to be. I think technology has played a part in that, but I think that the quality, you know, of the tournaments that these kids have and the ability to play in these different events that they, you know, didn't play in at a young age, just for many factors, you know, because of technology, because it's easier to travel now, because of resources, you know. I mean, let's face it, if your parents have the resources to make, you know, get you to all these events,
yeah,
you have a leg up, and that helps as well. Experience, I mean, you can't buy experience. You have to put yourself in those situations and, you know, learn how to deal with those nerves.
Yeah, and there's so much more focus on college golf now. You know, ESPN playing a lot of these tournaments on TV, so even that stigma is gone away. I mean, I can't imagine if I'm playing in some golf event and all of a sudden there's a guy with a TV camera 6 yards behind me. This is going to be the worst shot in history.
Yeah, when I used to work at Treetops Resort, we did this big Patriot Pro-Am, and we would do a shootout on the, you know, I'm sure you played the Treetops course at Treetops.
Oh, yeah.
And we would, for the shootout, we do, you know, there's this huge ceremony that Kevin McKinley puts on.
Sure.
And everybody has to hit their tee shots for this shootout with hundreds of people watching them, you know.
Yep.
Everybody, and nobody's warmed up at that point because they sat through this half hour ceremony, And then all of a sudden you have to hit 130-yard wedge shot on number one of three tops in front of, 200 people. And God bless them. Some of those Patriots, veterans, they let's face it, they've dealt with a lot more stress in their life than hitting 130-yard wedge, most of them. But, they always surprised me how well they would hit it off that tee. It was pretty cool stuff.
When we return here on Finding Fairways, we will discuss what's going on with the Saudi Arabia Tour, Dustin Johnson, and a number of other players, including a local kid named James Piatt. Coming up on Finding Fairways, brought to us by CarlsGolfLand.com. Brought to us by CarlsGolfLand.com. Jerry Coyne is live in the studio with Fred Altvater from the Michigan, Indiana, and Ohio Golf Journals. Good morning, Fred. How are you?
Hey, Jerry. Fantastic. Great to be here in Traverse City with the sun shining. Beautiful early summer day up here. Chamber of Commerce-like weather. Golf courses are humming. Everybody's got to get up here and see this.
Yeah, nobody loves golf more than you do, and I wanted to get a different voice on what's been happening, especially this week with the LIV Tour.
Has something been happening?
Right. What? I mean, when it's the second story on ESPN and it doesn't involve Tiger Woods, you know something big's happening in the world of golf.
So this is the question. Is there any bad marketing, right? So bad news is good news, or what do we got going?
We're seeing more and more players cross the line. When Dustin Johnson did it last week, we talked about it on the show here, and originally he said he was going to be loyal to the tour, and then,
for $125 million, can you be loyal?
It just goes to show you that everybody has their price. Right now,
Pauline is buying. She's out shopping for Jets as we speak.
But right now, Rory and Justin Thomas don't have a price, but DeChambeau and Patrick Reed do. Tiger Woods obviously didn't need the $850 million they offered him to come across the aisle. This is just going to get bigger.
It just blows your mind, Jerry. I've been around golf now for 60 years, right?
Right.
And we've never seen anything like this. So the days of Hogan and Snead and Palmer and Nicklaus, playing major championship golf and playing for the trophies. And yeah, they made a lot of money along the way and endorsements and things that they actually did. But it started with their performance on the golf course.
Right.
These guys now, yes, they're very good players, okay? And some of them have had good careers and are on the back end of their careers. So their money-making years are behind them. So for the most part, the Lee Westwood, the Kevin Na, the Ian Poulter, the Graham McDowell, if somebody's going to offer them $30 million to come and play...
Guaranteed
to come and play in a $25 million tournament... Just one tournament,
right,
where the first place is $4 million, and the last place is $150,000. There's eight tournaments. Eight times $150,000, still a lot of money. Okay, when you got the guarantee.
Somebody asked me though, a guy that I really respect in the world of golf said, "Well, but Jerry, why are they doing it? Like, so there's not even a TV." Outlet right now.
There will be, though. That's going to be announced. That's going to have to be announced pretty soon. With these names, DJ was the game changer.
Sure. And, DeChambeau is a needle mover if he can remain healthy.
If he can get back healthy.
Yeah. And Patrick Reed is a cheater, some people think.
So somebody texted me yesterday and said, hey, do you think that the tour guys got together and ponied up the money to give to LIV so that they would bring Reed and Bryson over because they don't want to play with them anymore?
Well, we're finding out more and more that even though, Phil's done a lot for the game, there's a lot of guys in the locker room that have their issues with Phil Mickelson as well, So not the favorite guys on the tour. We also found out this week, Fred, that U.S. Open and the RNA are not going to restrict people who are qualified, which I didn't think they could do.
If they want to maintain an Open Championship, Open Championship means we are open to the best golfers,
right.
No matter where you come from. You come from South Africa, you come from South America, we don't care. If you can play from China, we want you.
Right.
We got qualifiers. So you've got guys like Phil Mickelson. Phil Mickelson won the PGA Championship last year.
Right.
He's exempt for four more years, right?
In the U.S. Open, and he's for lifetime for the PGA and the Masters.
Well,
you know,
the Masters, that's a question mark.
That's an invitational.
It's an invitational.
Right.
And Fred Ridley told Dustin Johnson and Bryson DeChambeau when they were thinking about this a couple months ago, and that's why DJ kind of backed off of it, because Ridley told DJ at that time, this is a tradition that the past champions are invited. It's not a guarantee.
Right. But they still have the same criteria of, so as a, you know, he should have at least 10 years as a master championship to get into that own tournament.
Yep.
Just like, you know, Phil, that's the criteria.
Yeah.
As an open champion, he can play until he's 60 all of that. So I didn't think that those, the majors would restrict the guys that are absolutely qualified.
They can't.
Yeah.
They cannot restrict. So let me ask you a question. So if you're Dustin Johnson or you're Phil, you know, Phil's got, 45 wins or whatever.
Sure.
And Dustin's got over 20. So he's got they have lifetime exemptions to the PGA Tour. So now the Tour, Jay Monahan says, you guys are suspended. You're out of here. You can't play. So if you're Phil or you're Dustin Johnson, you've earned those 20 wins.
Is DJ a lifetime member? Because I know Phil is. Phil has got the criteria.
Dustin's over 20 wins, yes.
Okay, so, yeah.
The only reason he didn't have it because he wasn't meet the age old enough.
Right,
but he would, you know, he will be another.
As soon as he turns 45, he's right.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So they have earned the criteria to play in any PGA Tour event they want to play in.
Right.
So if Jay Monahan, as the commissioner of PGA Tour, tells me I can't, and I've already earned the right, do you think that's a lawsuit waiting to happen?
Well, I always thought that, you know, Phil's original posturing was all about a lawsuit. More than anything else, we want this in court. You know, but what are the things, Fred, that I think Phil, more than anybody else, has lost sight of? You know, a lot of this came from the fact that, you know, the PGA Tour owns the media rights for these guys.
That's a big deal.
And Phil had
And they can't give that up.
Yeah.
They cannot give that up.
But Phil had to pay to have his stuff in the...
Big deal. He didn't have to pay. TNT paid.
Well, maybe they did. Okay.
He didn't pay. He was making a big deal over nothing.
It was a burr in his saddle.
Yeah.
Yeah. One of the more interesting things that came out of this, Fred, is James Pyatt from Michigan State in the U.S. Amateur...
U.S. Amateur Champion.
Champion is headed over there.
That was really surprising to me when I first heard that. I never in a million years expected that. That came out of left field. It was a real curveball there. But as I got to thinking about it, you know, it probably makes sense for him. James is a really good player. You win a U.S. Amateur, you're a great player. But he's
so is Nathaniel Crosby.
Yeah, that happens. You can go back in time. There's been some great U.S. Amateur champions. It just doesn't relate to being a professional golfer. So James,
not always, that's for sure.
Yeah, he's not the biggest guy. He's not the strongest guy. He doesn't have the distance yet. You know, he's played now what, 4 or 5 PGA events. He has not made a cut yet. So that's a pretty telling thing right there. Okay. So if I'm him and I'm looking at things and they're throwing, my understanding is they threw $6 million at him. Okay.
And we got to remember that all these figures don't include any winning
prize money. Exactly.
Right.
So they're throwing $6 million at him. So he cannot. He probably would not make that $6 million in 5 years because he's going to spend a minimum of 2 years on the Korn Ferry Tour.
Yeah.
And he's not going to make. He might make $600,000 a year on the Korn Ferry Tour, maybe. And if he gets to the PGA Tour, then he'll get some endorsement money and maybe some prize money. But he's 3 or 4 years away from making any money in the PGA Tour.
Yeah, and that'll be another different interesting thing of what the PGA Tour. We don't even know where this is going to go. If so many guys are jumping the fence, the PGA Tour might have to change its stance completely. So there's so many what ifs, but it's the biggest story in sports right now.
Absolutely.
Yep. But the PGA Tour itself is a nonprofit. And, you know, and they have done a lot of wonderful things with the charities and everything else. And that's the way they decided to build this back when Jack and Arnie and Gary Player started the PGA Tour. It's a nonprofit, and all the other profits after running the tour go to charities, and what is it, close to $1 billion they've raised and given away?
It's pretty much like any business that gives to charity. What they really give to charity is a small percentage, but in their case, that small percentage is a lot of money.
A lot of money.
So if you go back when they started doing this back in the 40s and the 30s, it's over $2 billion,
yeah,
and they're approaching three, okay? So it is important. The LIV is not going to do that.
No.
They're keeping all that money and putting it in somebody's pocket, right?
Right.
So two problems that I have with this new tour, and it's definitely a money grab for these players, and if I'm in their position at the back end of my career and, you know, what they're talking, I probably am looking at it really hard.
Yep.
Because if somebody's going to give me $30 million, that's more than I'm going to make in the next several years. But the money's coming from, I don't care how they call LIV investments or what, it's Saudi Arabian money, okay?
But they're the trying government to support still does business with Saudi Arabia. Everybody does. So,
I know.
You know, it's, people want to call it blood money, but blood money buys a Mercedes just like charity money buys a Mercedes.
Yep, yep.
You know, it's going to be a continued story, but I wanted to really get your take on it, Fred, and I wanted to reintroduce you. It's been a few years since we've had you on the show. Tell our listeners how they get your great writing.
We're at OhioGolfJournal.com or MichiganGolfJournal.com or IndianaGolfJournal.com. We have great contributing writers. We do a lot of golf travel information, as a matter of fact. But yeah, we also do Back Nine Report TV on YouTube or on Roku. So if you want to look those things up, we do video as well.
Fred Altvader from the Michigan Golf Journal, Ohio Golf Journal, and all the other publications Fred mentioned. Check him out online. You'll be glad you did. That's going to do it for us here on Finding Fairways. As we like to say, find a fairway of your own, stick a peg in the ground, and pound it down the middle. We'll be with you next week.